This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Martin, and we're here once again to answer your questions.
Hi, I'm Carrie Taggart calling from Honolulu.
Hi, my name is Deirdre.
I work in a restaurant that has reopened and I don't really feel safe going back.
I know cases where employees had a doctor's note but no access to testing and they were denied pay.
My question is whether or not there's a possibility that the presidential election will be postponed.
What can we do if we disagree with our employer's ability to keep us safe?
When is it likely the vaccine will be found?
Has COVID-19 made our friendships closer and stronger?
Thank you, and be strong.
Bye-bye.
We have experts on hand to offer solid facts, to tell you what we know, and to correct some of the misinformation that's floating around. And when we don't know something, we'll tell you that too. This is our last week answering questions on the National Conversation, at least for the time being. But every night we begin by answering the question, what happened today? More than 40 million people have filed for unemployment since March. Another 2.1 million jobless claims were made last week. That's more than a quarter of the labor force. David Schmidt is the chief economist for the Nevada Department of Employment Training and Rehabilitation. He told NPR his state has been hit especially hard by the volume of unemployment.
We had been averaging approximately 10,000 new initial claims every month heading into this. And in the first week of the pandemic, we had over 90,000.
In New York, businesses can now refuse service to someone not wearing a mask following an executive order from Governor Andrew Cuomo.
You don't want to wear a mask? Fine. But you don't have a right to then go into that store if that store owner doesn't want you to.
The Boston Marathon was canceled today for the first time in the 124-year history of the race. Boston's Mayor Marty Walsh says the race will be run virtually instead.
This is a challenge. But meeting tough challenges is what the Boston Marathon is all about. It's a symbol of our city's and our Commonwealth's resilience.
Wisconsin has canceled their state fair. The annual event typically draws more than 1 million people. Cases in that state have risen since the court struck down the governor's stay-at-home order. COVID-19 cases in the United States have now crossed 1.7 million with 101,000 deaths. The world is racing to make a vaccine for the coronavirus to try and stop the spread of those cases and deaths. Scientists around the globe are months into human trials, injecting subjects with enough of the virus to develop antibodies without getting them sick. The goal is immunity, but there is still a lot we do not know about the virus and what we can expect. So to help us understand how a vaccine is coming along, we have NPR correspondent Joel Palca joining us one final time on the National Conversation. Joe, it's good to hear from you.
Hi, Michelle. It's good to be here. And I have to just correct one tiny thing you said. Yep. In these vaccines, they're not actually injecting virus. They're sometimes injecting parts of the virus that will generate an immune response. Small distinction, but I don't want anybody to think that they're actually having the virus shot into their arm when they make a vaccine.
Right, which some people will think. Well, thank you for that. So Yulin in San Francisco has this two-part question, something I think everybody would like to know right now. Let's listen.
When is it likely the vaccine will be found? And once we have the vaccine, can we go out freely?
Joe?
Well, I wish I could say for sure. It's one of those questions that everybody would like to have a definite answer for, and nobody has one. But there is a lot of activity going on. There are, I think at last count, 10 different vaccines that are starting or well along in trials in human subjects. The initial part of the trials is just to make sure they're safe and don't cause any dramatic illnesses themselves. The second stages will come along, and there'll be more vaccines starting out. So there's good progress. In terms of whether we can go out freely, well, it kind of depends on how good the vaccine is, how soon it gets here, how many other people get vaccinated. There's a lot of questions that have to be answered before going out freely. I think you can be a little more comfortable once you know you've had a vaccine and others around you have had it.
We also heard from Nicholas in Ithaca, New York. He was a little skeptical that we're even going to get to the point where a vaccine is ready, and this is his question.
Has there ever been a vaccine developed for any other coronavirus? And if not, how much confidence should we have that there will be one for this? Thank you.
So, Joe, first of all, do you mind reminding folks of what Nicholas means when he talks about the other types of coronavirus? Because I'm not sure everybody remembers that.
Right, exactly. So there are seven known different types of coronaviruses. Four of them we're pretty all familiar with because they cause the common cold, and they've been around for a long time. I'm sorry, four of them. Three of them are these new viruses. One was SARS that caused an outbreak of illness in early 2000s. Then there was MERS that came along in the 2010s, and now there's SARS-CoV-2. And the answer to the question of why we think they, or why scientists think they can make a vaccine against SARS-CoV-2 is they have, in fact, made vaccines against MERS and SARS. The difficulty was they never got licensed because they never got tested because the illnesses went away on their own. There wasn't enough people exposed to test the vaccine in. So they just, you know, there was no impetus to make them. But they got fairly well along in development, and they think they have that helped them get prepared and confident that they can make one against this third dangerous coronavirus.
That's fascinating. Thanks for that. So here's our next question, and I know a lot of people have asked about this. This is Wendy in Henderson, Nevada.
Does the coronavirus that causes COVID-19 mutate like the flu virus? If so, could the COVID-19 vaccine in development now be ineffective next year?
Joe?
A great question. COVID virus, SARS-CoV-2, is an RNA virus. RNA viruses are more likely to change over time than other kinds of viruses. But turns out coronavirus has a special error-correcting mechanism inside it so that the RNA that gives its genetic instructions is replicated fairly carefully from one generation to the next. The meaning of that is it doesn't change very much. So that's the good news. The bad news is it hasn't been around long enough to be sure that those error-correcting mechanisms are working properly in the SARS-CoV-2. So give it a couple years and they'll be able to answer that question better.
Here's another interesting question about the success, the possible success of a vaccine. This is John in New York. Here he is.
This is John Copper in Dundee, New York. I know that with the flu vaccines, often the effectiveness is only around 40 to 50%. If a vaccine is found for COVID-19, what percentage of effectiveness would be declared a success?
Okay, no disrespect to Mr. Carper, but Joe, I'm going to ask you first to truth squad the premise of the question. Is that true that with the flu vaccines that we're all familiar with, the effectiveness is only around 40 to 50%? Is that true?
In some cases, yes, that has been the case. Sometimes flu is a complicated one to explain, but in some cases, the vaccine that comes out, because it does come change every year, the vaccine that's built against the virus that they think is coming might be slightly wrong. So the vaccine may work if the right virus comes along. So I don't know if that makes complete sense.
No, it does.
But
sure.
Yes, in some cases, the flu isn't 100%, not even close to 100%. And it's an interesting question, which I talked to some vaccine manufacturers about, and they say, we'll be happy to have 40 or 50%. Not they'd be happier to have 100%. But 40 or 50% is good. I mean, it's going to lower deaths, presumably. But, you know, it's hard to get the efficacy until you've studied a vaccine for a while. And so it may be maybe 80 or 90%, but you have to wait until you've had enough people not get sick, which is a kind of a crazy idea. But you have to have certain people getting sick and not getting sick, and when you compare a placebo and a vaccine, before you can say for certain how effective the vaccine. And then is it just not getting sick, or is it not getting sick and going to the hospital, or is it not getting sick and going to the hospital and going to the intensive care unit, or is it not getting sick and dying? So there are several layers of what you want in terms of effectiveness.
And we have another question here. Let's try to squeeze it in about the whole question of what constitutes success. Ken in Portland was curious about how we can get enough vaccine to get it to people. Let's just play the question.
What happens after a vaccine is approved for use? At that point, enough would need to be manufactured for possibly billions of doses. What is being done now to prepare for this scale-up? Are manufacturing companies already involved? And does the federal government play a role in managing this scale-up and distribution?
Yeah, well, I can tell you that this is something that is very much on the mind of vaccine manufacturers. But the other interesting thing to think about is I talked to a vaccine manufacturer, and their vaccine requires 5 micrograms of this protein that they think will generate an immune response. 5 micrograms. Now, if you make a pound of this stuff, that's 500 million doses. So if they're right that 5 micrograms will work, they don't have to make a ton of it in order to have a global supply. But then there's still things like needles and vials and distribution and getting it to places. So it's a huge, huge issue. Now, is the government coordinating this? Some parts of the government are. Is it coordinating it properly? Who knows? We'll see. But it is an enormous undertaking, and people are definitely thinking about it now.
Well, speaking of an enormous undertaking, NPR Science Desk correspondent Joe Palca. Joe, you've taken so much time to answer these questions these last couple of months. We all appreciate it. Just wanted to say thanks.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's been an interesting, rewarding, and I wish it was a happier time to be talking about this stuff. It's very interesting.
It is. So up next, we're going to answer your questions about how elections are going to go during a pandemic. This is The National Conversation with All Things Considered from NPR News, and we hope you'll stick around.